You're listening to Japan to Meet You Later from Beats, Lies, and Lies.
Sounded like an eagle, turned out to be a siren, but not the good kind, red and blue wine. I've got too many problems, they never seem to end. It all depends on what you call a problem, and when you reach your ending, will Peter be demanding one more question?
Hi, I'm Jack from Saugerties, and I'm at the radio station with my sister Katie. You're listening to WGXC Aqua. Have a nice day!
WS Graves, crashing into me, G stands for green, and
Wave Farms WGXC 90.7 FM thanks our volunteer programmers and their dedication to bringing interesting, exciting, engaging, and important programming to our airwaves. We thank all of our underwriters, one-time and monthly supporters, folks with WGXC bumper stickers on their cars, callers, interview guests, workshop participants, community partners, and listeners for their support. Without all of you, WGXC would not be what it is and where it is today. We invite you to join us in celebrating the station's accomplishments so far and all the exciting opportunities ahead for expanded community participation, education, and creative community radio. Make a one-time donation or commit to a monthly gift to show your investment in and support of our community. Visit wgxc.org/donate now to make your pledge.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Devin of Pearling, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Meant to Ferment. This is a fermentation-focused monthly show on WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM. We're here in the Catskill studio, staying dry in the rain. My name is Rebecca Echevarria, and I will be your host for this show. This show explores all things fermentation through interviews with Hudson Valley practitioners, brewers, farmers, winemakers, artists, picklers, bakers, all that and in between. Today, I am super grateful to have Ben Salif Traore and Chrissy Traore of CNB Kitchen here with me. CNB Kitchen is a cafe, wholesale bakery, and provisions market down the road in Cairo. Fermentation, in all meanings of the word, extends to each part of their business, from crafting sourdough bread and croissants using a wild, long method, to supporting the regional economy through partnerships with local businesses. Their work is guided by an intention for community members to connect and gather over delicious and artisanal food. Today, we're going to discuss their sourdough practice, explore their research and development process, and dive deeper into their experiences crafting their signature country white bread and sourdough croissants. I first tried their bread, specifically their arborio loaf, during a fellowship at Sky High Farm. I picked it up from Chase Home Farm down the road. I was super excited to share it with the other fellows. I remember the texture being so soft and getting the sweetness from the rice and the almost glistening crust. So I'm super excited to talk with you both. But before we do, I have a couple of sourdough-inspired songs to play. So the song playing under me is actually called Yeast Starter by Luis Barros, from his 2016 album, Intense Brewing. Next, we have Bread by Norma Tanega, which is an early solo recording from 1966 that was re-released on the album In the Shadows in 2019. So we're gonna head into that now. But before we do, Ben and Chrissy, have you encountered any songs about bread possibly before this show?
Not really. Okay. This is my first time hearing that. And I'm really
wonderful.
Interested to hear about.
Yes, it was also my first deep dive into songs about bread. So, okay, let's have some bread to enjoy. So next up is Your Love Keeps Lifting Me Higher and Higher by Jackie Wilson from his 1967 album Higher and Higher. I wanted to include this song because, Chrissy, in some of your videos about CNB online, you mentioned the yeast having a party
while
the bread is proofing, particularly if the dough encounters higher temperature than expected. And it made me think of... this song. So, and maybe the yeasts are also thinking of this song.
Party time.
Yeah. So we're going to enjoy the yeast party. So here we are. Hi, Ben and Chrissy.
Hi. Hi, good morning.
Thank you so much again for being here today. I just want to, oh yeah, just a small note about the mic. You got it. How are you doing today?
Doing good. Little drizzly and rainy, but you know, fall spring, part two.
Yes, we're in a transitional period. And Ben, you were up earlier baking bread.
Yeah. I got up earlier today to start my baking and then make it up.
Yeah, and came down to here, to Catskill. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah,
thanks to you.
I wanted to start it off with kind of general question with however you'd like to interpret it, but perhaps we can start with some of the basics. How do you define fermentation, maybe specifically for sourdough, your practice?
Huh. Well, fermentation is very, very big, vague and very broad. So for me particularly, I think my past shaped me in a way that I was able to work at different bakeries long enough for me to figure out the road to take for our endeavor. So starting with the main concept of fermentation is a culture of living bacteria. One has to define what kind of like the process to take. And it means like it's very vague. By that, I mean that there's a lot of type of fermentation. So, for example, me particularly, I'm more into like what you call the liquid leaven type mm-hmm. of fermentation. And to help me streamline my production. Because with the knowledge that you acquire throughout the year with bread making, you realize that there's so many variables, there's so many entities, there's so many roads to explore, and if one does not pay attention, you get lost in translation. So, like, yeah, so the liquid leaven is more like what I want it to go forth with. It's more controllable. And brings up a nice tang to the bread. It's very, very super healthy for you.
Yeah.
You know, because it's more like one of those where, like, the process of the bread makes it so that everything is broken down for your body to be able to digest and benefit for all the vitamins, all the good stuff that comes from the bread. Because, like, my wife likes to use an example. Like, we like to use pretty much our lifestyle to compare to the evolution of bread. So, like, let's say, she likes to say that, compare us to animals, like herbivores. See, so same way cows can digest grass and all those, and we cannot because of how the structure of their stomach is made of. So for us, since we cannot really digest that per se, so having that fermentation, the longer it goes, the more you break down all the enzymes and the more you make available the nutrition, the nutrient for your body.
Yes, yeah, it encapsulates so many things.
Yes.
And with the microbes, so you have the yeast and the lactic acid bacteria, and they're breaking down, like you said, the starch and the proteins to make it easier for us to enjoy.
Thank you for putting it that way.
But I loved how you mentioned the beginning of your journey, and I was curious about what drew you to sourdough. What was it about the practice? Because you had experience, I think, in other parts of the food world, but sourdough seems to have kind of stolen your heart.
Yes. So let's say it's more consistent and it brings some sort of stability in your life.
But talk about your mom. Talk about why you...
Well, so the term mom is very derogative, so maybe...
No, your actual mother.
So I was like at a stage of my life where really I needed to follow a road, like professional road. And every time I would call my mom back home in Africa... knowing that she's type 2 diabetes, she kept mentioning the fact that her doctor says that she can only eat sourdough bread too, you know, like that's because, and I kept thinking, why sourdough bread? And after doing more research, I realized, okay, so it's pretty much like, you know, breaking it down all the enzyme, the sugar is more controlled, you know, and it's a healthy lifestyle. So I was like, okay, so that contributes to a healthy lifestyle. And what is more than making everybody else around you feeling better about themselves when they finish eating without having any, you know, issues.
I wasn't quite as altruistic. I was there for the flavor.
Okay.
So
Yeah, everyone's welcome. It comes into sourdough in their own.
So that was one thing. And then, like I said, the stability, being able to be predictable. And then the repetition, which makes it more interesting, because in that repetition, it's never the same. You have to take a lot of things into account. It brings up science, a lot of science, temperature.
And you're really good at math.
I try. And then, what should I call it again? So, yeah, we covered up the temperature. And then,
Yeah, no, I mean, it's beautiful to hear. It's interesting, just for listeners. A sourdough starter can be called colloquially a mother. And so you also, your mother was kind of folded into your entry into the sourdough practice. And you also both, I read, met over a sourdough starter, also called a mother. So we have...
So yeah, so I would say, interesting, let's be careful about the use of the word mother.
Some
people name their... It's very common that people name their starter. It has a name, or they call it the Levan, or they call it the pre-ferment.
So that's more like the more like professional technical terms. Like the mother is more like derogative. And then, like I said, it's like... So, but like I said, so that,
No, yeah. I mean, it's interesting. You have so many people who are engaged in fermentation, and everyone comes at it, like you said, with their own, motivations, and then they make sense of it their own ways. Mm-hmm. Some people can name their starters, some people don't. Some people might use different language for their mothers, some people don't. Yeah. So I wanted to just also touch on, you mentioned a Levan, and that's a different, you have your sourdough starter, and you're feeding your starter, the yeast and the lactic acid bacteria are kind of getting engaged, activated by the water. Once it meets the flour, they start reproducing, start digesting, and then over time, you have a sourdough starter, but then the levain is something different.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's levain and there's also poulish.
Okay.
So those three terms, so like sourdough starter is mainly the one that you cultivate over time with a choice of your own choosing flour, because the main ingredient is flour. Now, as a baker, you can choose to break that flour with different type of flour, mingle them together for more flavor, for the more texture. And that you always use some, and then you save some, and you refresh it as you go. And over time, it builds up, whatchamacallit, more flavor.
Yeah.
And then it becomes its own environment. Because, mm-hmm. again, if I was to make that starter here, it would be a little bit different than if I was to make it elsewhere, because mm-hmm. of, like, the water, how the water feel, the air.
Mm-hmm. Wild yeast.
The wild yeast. Because it's pretty much like a cultivation of wild yeast. One would say that it's more like it eliminates any bacteria that does not belong there.
Yes.
And then it just multiplies itself with what with the proper bacteria. So if you're not a lactobacillus, I think there's another enzyme that I forgot on top of my head, but if you're not those two main, you're not going to be part of that.
Yeah, they create like this type of symbiotic environment.
Yes.
So, and the lactic acid bacteria don't mind the ethanol from the yeast. Yeah. The yeast mm-hmm. don't mind the acidity from the lactic acid bacteria.
Yes, indeed.
So they're just kind of cozy and happy to be together.
I think it's also cool to mention to people that a starter is yeast and bacteria in a symbiotic relationship. So we think about yeast, but it's actually yeast and bacteria. It's both together.
Yes. But then there's what you call also commercial yeast.
Yes.
So now that commercial yeast come in mostly into play in what you call the poulish. Mm-hmm. So that's more like the regular starter. There's many different type of starters. You can make a stiff or you can make a liquid. Mm-hmm. And each of them also plays different roles. You know, liquid, more tangy, stiff, milder flavor. Mm. And
it can affect the hydration ratio of your bread. There's all these other considerations with it.
So there's a lot of consideration to go. So the poulish mostly is like more like a one-to-one ratio between the flour and the water with a little bit added of commercial yeast. Mm-hmm. And then you let that ferment overnight mm-hmm. or like for a certain period of time, preferably between 8 and 16 hours or maybe slightly above if you want to. Mm-hmm. That helps build up the flavor too of that poulish, but that mostly help contribute with like strengthening your dough mm-hmm. and then also conserving and preserving it mm-hmm. and then help you with like more open crumb structure.
A little more consistency. With the wild sourdough, you don't have as much control mm-hmm. and with the poulish, it's very predictable. So mm-hmm. they've developed over time certain bacteria and yeast. Well, it's really just one yeast strain in the commercial yeast for the poulish, and mm-hmm. it's very predictable
mm-hmm.
And it works very well.
Yeah.
Now, as far as now, so that's the poulish, and that's more like a French term,
mm-hmm.
French Italian, I think. the levain, now that is more like you take your starter and you mix that with your choosing flour, more like that's more for like a specific type of bread, and you add some yeast to it, I think. Mm-hmm. And then that you can discard that and use it, but it's more like if you're going to, let's say you have an area of like five type of bread that you produce, and one you use two main starter, the other one can have his own specific of style of Leuven mm-hmm. to best represent the flavor that you're looking for. Mm. So like if you want a rye, if you want it to be more like a rye tendency, then you can have your Leuven and have the way you refresh your Leuven, mm-hmm. what ingredient you put in it will be more characteristic of that bread mm-hmm. and it will help that develop that flavor tendency.
Yeah, now that you mention, I mean, touching on flour, because there's so many considerations that go towards building a loaf, flour being one of the major ones. I liked this quote from a cookbook I have, Flour, Water, Salt, Yeast. The author, Ken Forkish, says, "A true artisan baker is someone who understands how to manipulate the relatively small number of variables to produce desired bread." But with flour, so you, like you had mentioned, you have a Leuven. If you want your rye bread, you're potentially feeding it rye flour will impart flavor into the loaf. With how do you, what is your experience working with flours here in the Hudson Valley? You, I know collaborating with regional businesses is a part of your kind of core mission. How, what has it been working with flours kind of? Possibly from this area, possibly not.
Yeah. Can I?
Yeah, you go for it. Yeah.
So we work with, we use King Arthur flour as our primary flour, unbleached, unbromated. And I think it's important for anyone listening, if you're making a sourdough or if you're going to start baking bread, it, unbleached, unbromated flour has natural yeast on it because it hasn't been killed off. So if you are looking to do a sourdough starter or looking for, you know, unique flavors in your bread, that's definitely a way to start. And then we work with farmer ground flour, which is a locally milled and sourced flour. And we get our rye and spelt from them. And that comes in weekly. And we try to keep that as fresh as possible for all of our flours so that the moisture content is high, the bran content is high. And, you know, we get more unique flavors from them, right?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Because I think the way, because there's different type, like even when you speak about flour, there's different type of flour. So even, let's take rye, for example.
Sure.
Rye, they can, you can have a whole flour or they can sift it. And then every time, and each kind of rye, there's like medium rye, dark rye. And then all of those, the hydration, the way, the demand of water is different. You know, some mm-hmm. will soak up more water, some need more water, less water. Mm-hmm. So it's like a play between your flour, your hydration level, and as of course.
And the yeast behave differently with different flours.
Yes, yes,
I think that's a part people don't realize.
You gotta think, yeast, what does, what gets the yeast moving? Temperature and sugar. Because mm-hmm. Yeast needs sugar, of course, to produce CO2. While they're doing their reaction. Mm-hmm. And then, so rye flour, I think as far as I'm concerned, I think is the one that has most the most sugar content.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
The flour. And it goes down per different type, like spelt, whole wheat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even in the white flour, there's a high gluten, and there's like a AP flour, there's bread flour.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a play with different flours to see which one reacts better to your environment.
Yeah. Sort of, you're working with a lot of different considerations. And yeah, I loved reading. I mean, also just to know with this sourdough starter and the yeast are responsible for the CO2, which gives the bread
open structure,
yeah, the lift.
It,
yes. Mm-hmm. And the microbes, they have their own preferences. Like you said, if mm-hmm. yeast prefer sugar, that they're sort of happy to encounter that in the flour.
Yep.
And depending on their diet, kind of, that will impact the flavor of the outcome, the loaf.
Yes, depending on 100%. The diet, and also how far and how long you give that fermentation to occur.
Yes.
So,
time.
Time. So I like to use, I was mentioning at some point, bread sourdough making is like running a marathon, pretty much. You have to pace yourself. So the longer you want your bread to ferment, you have to take a lot of things in consideration. So it's like the yeast is like us. One is warm, you're happy, you want to run and all of that. One is cold, you move slowly. Doesn't mean you're not doing your job, you're just now, you know, at a slower pace. But at that slower pace also comes in. Yeah, pre-caffeine. So yeah, so what is that?
I'll be thinking of that as I drink my coffee. Like, how are the yeast feeling as I'm drinking this coffee?
Right?
Kind of get into their mindset.
Get
yeah.
The yeast going.
Yeah, so if you put your yeast in a condition to slowly do his job, it will do it right, and it will over time you have better result than introducing the bacteria, the enzyme to like more like a room temperature or beyond temperature. Then you're facing yourself to more activity, more like CO2, more like.
They work faster.
They're producing this CO2.
Yes, but I wouldn't say less efficiently, but it will impact the flavor.
Yeah, yes. Different pace.
Different pace. Yeah.
Flavor and structure.
Flavor and structure, open crumb structure, yeah. Tightness, all of those.
Yeah, I mean, I think advertise your sourdough as long, slow fermentation.
Yep.
Yes.
So was flavor kind of the main driver? What motivated you to adopt that practice? Because I think, I mean, everyone, like I said before, you know, sourdough comes in so many different forms. And
so your body just can't digest bread made too quickly.
Okay.
It just can't. There's too many starches in there and your body gets sick. And yeah. I don't want to say anyone's going to get sick, but it can really have an adverse effect on people's bodies. And allowing it the time to properly ferment, first and foremost, is how we've eaten bread for millennia. So that's just the way bread's supposed yeah. to be made. I mean, that's how you make bread. It's no shortcuts. You have to ferment the bread.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you get flavor. So like 24 hours is our least fermentation. And then we go all the way up to 72.
Yes.
And that's where you're really building on flavor at that point, because the starches have been metabolized at 24. They're good.
Yeah.
But like you can talk about country white, or, you know, and how I know we're going to.
I was going to say, but even in the length of like, let's say 24 hours, it's not really 24 hours, it's more than 24 hours, because those pre-ferment, like the starter and like, let's say the leaven, the poolish would have been made prior, like the day before at a certain designated time. Okay. And then, again, thinking about that whole marathon running situation.
Where are we in the marathon?
Yeah. I like it. It's like a marathon. It's like a,
yeah.
Like, you slow down the activity by cooling it per se, like giving it like a temperature below 60, 50, around that, like higher 40s, depending on really the length that you're looking for. And then giving that preferment with a lot, like a whole 24 hours, you know, and then you mix your dough and then you give another whole 24 hours before you bake it. So that's
48
whole,
like, hours.
Yeah. hours.
At least.
Yes. I was doing research for this show, listening to a podcast, and they mentioned there was a period of time where it was so intuitive to know how to make bread that no one wrote down the recipes. It was almost like you're not going to write down a recipe for preparing a cup of tea. Like, it's like it was that natural. Yeah. So,
I mean, and that goes back to we had a little discussion before the radio started about muscle memory, and where you've done something so much that it becomes second nature. And if you're baking a loaf of bread every single day, think about it. Like, really practically, it's like that cup of tea. You don't need a recipe to make a cup of tea. You're not going, how much exact water do I put? And when do I know to put the tea bag? You know what to do because you've done it so much. And you can even extrapolate that further. Like, if you cook eggs for breakfast every day, you're not weighing your eggs.
Yeah.
And measuring how much time they're
in
the pan.
Okay. You're welcome here.
It's okay. It's okay. Everyone has to start somewhere. Yeah. But, you know, it becomes a process that you get to know the feel of when to pull the eggs off the pan before they reach the doneness that you like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing if you're baking one or two loaves of bread a day. You're going to have that muscle memory. With us, it's a little different because we do bulk bread.
Yeah.
So it's a completely different process.
Because
we're making giant batches of bread and allowing it to ferment. And we're kind of doing things a little differently. So it, you know, it requires a little more planning, but people have been making bread for a really long time. And like, it's a delicious food. It's so good.
For good reason.
Like all fresh bread is good bread. Let me just like start right there and just hit that off the bat. All fresh bread is good bread. All hot pizza is good pizza. Like,
yes.
That's just base.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yep, I like that thought. I mean, you know, cause sometimes people can, and I do too. You're looking for these specific characteristics and the outcome of your final loaf. Sometimes things don't go as planned. Is this in quotations bad bread? In my opinion, not.
Nah,
no. No.
It's
unanticipated.
Right.
But not in a negative kind of sense. Yeah.
But there's no bad bread. There's no bad children. There's no bad bread. No,
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
in my just a general announcement. Oh goodness! But you did mention. Well, yeah, just touching on one of the last, I think maybe big variables is climate. You said you can kind of slow that activity down if you put the dough in a cooler temperature.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do you manage that? You said you're doing bulk breads. Maybe climate is very critical because that's a lot of bread.
Yeah, that is, yeah. So like I said, it's all about how well you can control your environment. Where you bake the bread is important, like where you mix it, where you shape it, where you rest it. All of those is to be taken into account. So if you have a sound, like element-proof structure, then you don't need to really worry much about what's going on outside. You can just focus on...
But you guys take temperature all day.
Yes, we do.
Okay. Say more.
Yes, we do. Because again,
interesting.
It's all about
factoring in.
It's all about that slow pacing it, right? So every degree matter. So it's like, okay, once you hit a certain threshold, you know that all these yeast in there are either sleepy or they are like moving fast. And if your goal is to not to bake them right now, then if they're moving too fast, then then you need to find a way to have a talk with them. You know, you need to slow down your pace. So but the best way, you need to find the cooler. Like,
less coffee, guys.
How you put, yeah, exactly. how you control them. You have a walk. You have a fridge with a good temperature of like 40 degrees. You know, that's anywhere, I think, 39 to 45. Good temperature to slow down the yeast activity.
And we keep
really
two fridges. We have one a little colder than the other.
Yep.
And we have one a little bit warmer just for bread.
For bread. So like an average of like, let's say between like 40 and 50.
Okay.
Fluctuate. And then, we are a little bit unconventional where like the way the structure in which we are making the bread is getting affected by the elements. Mm. So we have to also take that into consideration. So if it's too cold outside, we need to find a way to give that bread maybe a little bit of warmth for it to keep going. Because then if whatever is going on outside can be felt inside.
Ambient room temperature.
Yeah.
You know, you got to keep that as a factor.
Thank you.
Like the infrastructure itself that you're baking in is impacting the temperature fluctuation. Mm-hmm. So to be cognizant of, it's going to be a cold day, I have to take that into consideration with how I'm going to.
Yeah, and you'll see that in home recipes where they say, okay, you're going to mix your dough and then set it on your radiator or put it on top of your refrigerator, or put it high on top of a cabinet. What that recipe is doing is trying to get you to control for temperature.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't realize that's what's happening. Yeah. And another important part of that is temperature and moisture. So water is really critical, and moisture, outside hydration, both in the ambient temperature and in your dough, effects. So those two things are things that you can really control as a baker, and they watch that. You know, I don't bake bread. I want to be very clear. I am not a baker. Okay.
But she's the baker's wife. So
I'm the baker's wife. I teach food science. I do teach food science, and I have for the last 13 years, but I'm very interested in the mechanics, and I love food, and I'm a chef, but I'm not a baker. But I watch the bakers all day, and they are temping from the minute they temp the water that goes to mix with the dough. They temp the dough when it comes out. They temp it after it stretch and folds and autolyse. Mm. They temp it when it starts shaping, when it finishes shaping, before it goes into the fridge, when it comes out of the fridge. I mean, it's like a constant thermometer game. It's always, where's my thermometer and what's the temperature of the dough?
So yeah, so for example, our routine goes as such. All right, so I would take summertime as a good example. Mm. It's warm. It's 80 degrees out, and then it's going to be 80 degrees in, whether you like it or not. So you have to make sure that the room temperature, you know, the ambient temperature is to your DTT desire, to where you desire it to be. So you pick a lane and you stick to it. Mm-hmm. Long fermentation means lower temperature. That's what it means for us. So therefore, we want to that dough until until the moment before it's baked to maintain that, like, let's say for us, that 50, 60 degree temperature in between average.
Kind okay.
Of yeah, that for us is good enough for the dough to go slowly at a good pace. Now, if you hit that above that room temperature, like what she said, when you follow the recipe and it says radiator room ambient temperature, then you're shortening
the time. Yeah.
Also, we have to remember one thing. There's so much food. There's so much nutrition. So much food for the yeast in the bread. Mm. At some point, there won't
it'll
be enough sugar.
Yes.
It will run out.
Yes.
So
and then it'll start lowering.
That's overproofing.
That's overproofing.
Yeast have spent, and they have no more CO2 left to bake.
Yeah. And we don't want the yeast. The yeast are, we're always thinking in yeast and we won't leave out the lactic acid bacteria. Always thinking of microbial perspectives.
Yeah. It's all about you, making you comfortable. Yeah.
I just wanted to mention for anyone tuning in, I'm speaking with Chrissy Traore and Ben Salif Traore of CNB Kitchen about their sourdough practice and just being cognizant of time. I mean, I did want to just touch on, you know, your research and development process, if you could speak briefly to that. Mm-hmm. I know that you do develop new types of bread occasionally. You have seasonal croissants. I was sorry to miss the seaweed croissant, but I did try your newest one, the pineapple. Can you remind me of the name?
Pineapple upside down croissant.
Pineapple upside down, yes, which was extremely delicious. Yes.
Thanks, Ben.
And but
thank you, Teresa. Shout out Teresa for the pineapple idea. Woohoo! Oh,
yay!
There's your on-air shout out.
Yeah. And thank you to the bakers for making it happen.
True that. True that.
Thank you to the pineapple people who harvested the pineapple.
Thank you to the pineapple people.
Every ingredient.
Reminds me of this guy that took a journey to grateful journey to say coffee. Thank you, coffee journey to say thank you and find himself 10,000 miles away from his house.
I love that. I know we need more of that type of. mindset.
So I think with our process of developing new products, it usually starts from a need somewhere. So someone has a need for a product. We recently developed a new hoagie. And you know, the need was, I really want a hoagie roll. I you know, am looking for that. And same thing when we developed our country white, where people wanted a rustic white loaf. They wanted that table bread, and a lot of our clients are restaurants, food service, and for them, having the larger loaves that are 2-kilo sliceable loaves is important, and people in our stores as well wanted it. So that's where that process kind of began. Do you want to talk about how you did that, babe?
Yeah, I mean, even for the country, if we want to bring in the country white, that started somewhere.
Exactly.
Or I imagine.
That's kind of where that started. It was like the rustic table loaf. Everyone wanted a rustic table loaf with a kind of open crumb. Okay. And our crumbs were a little tighter, not in a bad way, but just more consistent.
Okay.
And this really was trying to push that boundary and get that big sliceable loaf.
And would you say crumb, just for listeners or people who aren't familiar, like, you're talking kind of about the bubbles,
the air gap,
like, air. Yeah. Okay, yes.
Like once you slice your bread,
yes.
You look at it, how big the air pockets are.
Air pockets, say, yes. Yeah, so yeah, we're and that the air pockets is kind of where the CO2 congregates within
so
the loaf.
Yeah, so like kind of like thinking of a balloon.
Yes.
Like it expands with the heat. And then now with the gluten, and of course everything is about the gluten.
Yes.
So the gluten now being strong enough will expand to, you know, to its full expansion.
Okay.
Depending on like, again, what kind of leavening you're using.
Yes.
And then, yes, and it will literally have those open structure.
Okay. Yeah. So with the country white, I saw that online you share that it's a 72-hour, like Ben said, even longer when you're considering the pre-ferments that go into it. But, what does that bread look like? Any particular considerations with the fermentation process or with flavor, or how did that, if you want to share, briefly how that went for you developing that loaf?
Well, developing that loaf, again, it comes down to any basic recipe, learning your hydration, finding out how much water you want to go in that bread, because your hydration level also determine, tells you how long your bread can hold for. If it's stiff, if your hydration is stiff, let's say 50%, the moisture level inside will make it so that your bread will dry out faster.
Mm-hmm.
So finding that right balance of water that you want to be part of, and that is very important. So, yes, so, of course, it took us about, 6 months into testing, because as a baker, when you have a recipe and you are going through changes, recording every recipe is important.
Mm-hmm.
And then every single change that you make to it, because everything is based on baker's percentage,
mm-hmm.
you have to record that.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot change the percentages too drastically
mm-hmm.
as you're going to see a big difference and you're hitting the mark. So it's like a difference of 1-3% pretty much as you increment.
But it can have powerful differences.
Exactly. So
just with the baker's percentage, that's considering you have flour being 100% and then everything else is in relation to that. So hydration level, when you're saying 80%, that means that ratio.
80% of water goes into that. So if you take a kilo of flour, so 80% means 800 grams of water will be going to it, which you're going to be ending up with a very sticky dough.
Yeah.
much. And then now how you handle that is now, because, with every level of hydration comes a way of shaping it,
mm-hmm.
per se.
Yes.
If it's too sticky, it means the gluten is not as solid, per se, strong, and it will need something to help it, hold it. If it's too stiff, you have a very strong dough that, again, the open structure won't be that great.
Mm.
And so you have to find that balance, what works for you, and what is the goal too? So like she said, we cater to restaurants.
Mm.
So it's like we think about the chef, and we don't want to be considered as just a regular table bread.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be part of a chef culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We want it to be distinct.
We want it to be distinct.
Okay.
We want it to complement the chef.
Okay.
You know, so it's like, the sourdough countrywide, but then I will also add the beer bread.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, so we know the ingredient. It is flour, it is water, it is salt, it is yeast, and then you can add whatever else you want to add to it. But then guess what? Water, with the current starters and ferment that you have, we give it a good thing. But then guess what? I substitute the water with beer. That's another level.
So double fermentation.
What kind of beer? It's all up
really
to you. You know,
join the party now.
But of course, you won't get. There won't be any alcohol left by the time you're done. The bread is baked.
Yes.
But
the
flavor that you add to your own starters also enhances that. And then, hey, if I'm a chef, I taste it. This might pair up with this dish.
That's one of our favorites from restaurants is the beer bread, and we only sell it
wonderful.
Wholesale.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. Very enticing. You can be hungry. That's so interesting. Yeah, no, I love that also because I feel like we were speaking a little bit earlier and I love thinking about fermentation as a kind of co-collaboration with mm-hmm. microbes mm-hmm. and then bringing it out, that method of collaboration, you're collaborating with the restaurant, the bread yep. is collaborating with you. It's this yep. kind of long chain of relation yep. that's happening.
It brings up a whole community.
Yeah.
Yep. And much. Even development is a slow process. So every time, you know, you can start with a theory, but every time you create a tweak in the recipe, you have to actually execute the recipe.
Yes.
So you're adding days because it takes days. Time. So you can't just do like a hack version. You have to like, you have to actually complete the full cycle in order to see what the outcome is.
Sure, sure. So it's not, yeah, it's represented within the process itself mm-hmm. that you have to, the element of time and
yeah.
Yeah,
that's why we're not coming out with
forward.
Yeah, that's why we don't come out with products every week. There's not like this constant barrage of new products because we wouldn't be able to test them properly. We would spend our whole life just testing instead yeah. of actually yep, doing anything.
No, that's
we wouldn't
true.
Produce a thing. We'd just be producing tests.
And consistency.
It would be fun to be the taste tester. I mean, I would love for that volunteer
okay.
opportunity.
New business concept, everybody. We're just a tester, and all we do is try new products.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, when you think about, you know, test kitchens. And
Ben's like, no.
I mean, and the kind of, I think this might have come up on my last show, like the information overload, I think that you're encountering as a home cook, as just people living in the world cooking food.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you have these breads that have this intentional characteristics of flavor and the possibilities of application, like you said, when you're collaborating with the restaurants, it's kind of that kind of homage to the chef and how they're interpreting mm-hmm. it, because it has so many methods of interpretation that you don't have to come up with something new every time, because you're in this creative process mm-hmm. that you're interpreting. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
yep. it can, you can prepare it so many different ways.
Exactly. And yeah. yep. It pairs up with different stuff and it keeps your mind like going, as in like
interested. Like you're interested.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. And then I know this, we have about 10 minutes or so left, but and we'll have a brief outro, but I wanted to touch on your sourdough croissants.
Yeah.
Because that's such a unique process, I think, or I don't think I encounter sourdough used in croissants. So was that, I assume that was a quite intentional decision as well.
So I think it's important for people to understand that 90% of the croissants that you eat in the world are not made from scratch. They're okay. pulled out of a freezer, they're made in a factory, and then they're baked off at the point of sale. Okay. And, you know, asking when you go into a place, are these made here? Are these made from scratch? Is a great way to start with understanding the product you're getting. And we make ours 100% so from scratch.
Deeply from scratch made sourdough croissants.
Yeah, it's not, there's no like start, you know? A lot of people have, they take shortcuts along the way, and, you know, making sure that we do it from scratch is really important to us.
Yeah. No, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And it changes. Do you think, so what was your kind of main motivator for the sourdough incorporation in
traditional
the croissants?
Technique, right?
Well, it's a traditional
okay.
technique.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty
it
much
is.
Like,
okay.
yeah. So it's like pretty much you say sourdough croissant is like sourdough bread.
Okay.
Pretty much. It's like...
croissants are bread. People don't realize croissants are bread.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a cross. I would say it's like... It is its own category.
Yeah.
I don't know. The French people call it viennoiserie. You know,
yes.
So.
Much, much, much better pronunciation for all the listeners when I tried to practice that word with Ben before
yeah.
the show.
One more time, babe.
Viennoiserie.
Oh, beautiful. So good.
Yeah. So pretty much think about it. It is its own station. Pretty much. And then it's actually one of the older fermented bread as well, because we have what you call the pâte fermentée, meaning once you finish your croissant, you save a little bit and reuse it the next day in the next production. So what that does is it brings up the old flavor, it keeps up the flavor profile, and it gives it a nice
Continual lineage. It's like a mole.
Thank you.
It's the mole of bread. Okay. You mix a little bit from the last batch into every future batch. Yes. And you put the sourdough, the wild yeast.
Yep.
And do you use a Poulish as well? Or?
No, we don't use
no.
Poulish.
Okay.
So, yeah.
It's this combination of factors that influences how.
Yep. And that process alone takes 3 days.
Only 3 days.
Only 3 days and 17
easy,
steps.
Easy.
It's
yep.
easy.
Yep.
So easy.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
My gosh. Well, yeah. I mean, no, it's so interesting. I mean, yeah, there's just so many histories and so much craft behind the creation and development of these types of, you know,
bread.
Yeah. Bread.
Yeah.
That it's just extremely interesting and wonderful to hear about.
Yeah.
But, yeah, thank you so much for such an interesting and thought-provoking conversation. I wanted to ask, is there anything happening at the bakery in the near future you'd like to share with listeners?
Yeah, for sure. So there's always something happening. I mean, our motto is it's never a dull day. There's always something happening. So we are very excited. We are replicating ourselves, much like the yeast. We are doing it organically in a way that is a little different and unique to us. We are creating a franchise. So
amazing.
That is where bakers can join us and create their own vision of what they want their bakery to be. Mm. But with all the background and support of the business that we've built over these years, and really consistency. And it's the same thing like with our breads. It's all about consistency and making sure that the products we turn out are delicious no matter where you get them. And you can get them all over the Catskill region, and you can visit places that use them in their cooking and places that just sell them. Toko on Main Street has it here in Catskill. You can also visit Willa's, and they do sandwiches with it. You can visit our shop in Caro. And
where can people where can people find you? Or there's a You have a list of the wholesale locations.
Yeah, we have a list on our website of all the locations that you can get it either to buy product if you're just looking for bread to slice and take home, or if you are looking to try it in the chef's interpretation of what to do with our bread, which I think is really cool that we hand it off and let other people like imagine its second life.
Yeah.
You know, and I love seeing that.
Yeah. And you're on Instagram.
We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. Okay. We are on the radio at the moment.
And I just wanted to leave it off. If you have any, I mean, your experience is extremely apparent from this whole conversation. If you have any words of wisdom, anything that you'd like to pass on to perhaps prospective sourdough bakers at home.
I would say remember the base, like, the main recipe, but think be open-minded.
Okay.
Because I think of bread as a vessel. It's like it can take anything, it can be anything, and let your mind flow, wander, substitute a lot. It's a lifestyle. Therefore, whatever you feel like eating, you can put that in the bread.
Yeah.
And you can make it happen.
Yeah, there's like a possibility to, I don't know, not make it your own.
No, 100%.
Okay.
Make it your own.
You can make it your own, yeah.
You can take a recipe you find and tweak it.
The key to it, take a main recipe, make it.
Yeah.
Understand how that recipe work, and then from then, stick your tongue out and then substitute. Like, okay, I don't want water, I want this.
Steve started adding rosemary to his dough garlic and roasted garlic. My brother would, you know, make these inclusions, and he makes one loaf at a time. Knead method and, you know, just.
The main thing to remember is you have to develop your gluten first. Then everything after that is just incorporation. You just want to incorporate how you incorporate it, just gently. There's different ways to do it, but until the gluten is really strong to go, nothing really can be added to it.
Okay. So in terms of the types of...
You could, but like for any bakers that are doing it at home, mix your mixing and then play with it. Like, be open-minded.
Yeah, be open-minded. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Well, there is so much literal food for thought to consider. I say that I had the hesitation because I am a diehard recipe follower. Mm-hmm. It is exemplified through, you know, some of my neuroses. So sometimes you get a little scared. Like you're saying, you know, it's important to think about what's the ambient temperature mm-hmm. of my room, how to be cognizant of my environment, what I'm coming at with. So thank you again for
keep
this
note of anything
and keep notes.
Do.
Yes, take notes. Thank you. Thank you for this wonderful conversation. So excited to hear about the news in the future. And yeah, it's been a wonderful